Hey everyone, it's Nellie Thomas here. How are you doing? This is Dear Nellie, Sex, Relationships and Dating from the Other Side of 40. We hope you're loving the podcast as much as we are. A few quick things before we get into the show. For information about our fabulous live shows, which we do semi-regularly, go to nelliethomas.com and follow the links. We've just done a few in Melbourne, one in Sydney, and we'll be back for more early next year in 2024. Now, your listener calls are the backbone of this podcast. They're the best. Chuck out the rest. Take a chance. Send me in your question, your comment, your dating story, regret, anything really. We absolutely love hearing from you, and you can remain anonymous. Follow the links on my website or see the show notes for more information. To support the podcast and keep it coming out for free, please rate it on whatever app you're on now. Just pull it out. Hopefully give it a 5-star rating. That helps other people find it. Tell your mates, share it on socials, do all that stuff. If you can, please join Patreon or Acast Plus for $5 a month and you get a bonus episode every month and some other perks. If you can't, that's also fine. Just keep listening every week for free. We can't do this without yous. Now, this podcast was recorded in the council area known as Maribyrnong in Melbourne. I would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land, the Wurundjeri, Woiwurrung and Bunurong peoples of the Kulin Nation, and pay my respects to their elders past, present and emerging. Last but not least, if you're new to the podcast, this is a sex, dating and relationships podcast for adults. Let me put it this way. If you don't like swearing, it's really going to give you the shits. So off you fuck.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Dear Nellie, I could use some advice. Dear Nellie, yeah, some help would be nice. Dear Nellie, I'm eager to hear your point of view. Dear Nellie, there's a lot to explore, dear Nellie, when you're 40 or more, dear Nellie, so I'm hoping we can talk it through. Dear Nellie, I'm rocking my prime and it's time to get down some, maybe mess around some, it's never too late.
All right, welcome to Dear Nellie, Sex, Dating, Relationships from the Other Side of 40. Oh my God, I'm so excited to be joined by the one and only Kaz Cook.
Hello,
Kaz.
I'm so delighted to be here, Nellie.
Oh, me too, from your Venetian palace, your little backdrop.
My Zoom background is I think it's a Viennese library from the 14th century.
I love it.
That's so that you don't see my laundry basket. Yeah.
Well, it's so camp. I am here for it. Absolutely here for it. Now, I mean, we know each other through mutual friends and around the traps a little bit. I would describe you as an author. First and foremost, would that be, I mean, you were a journalist, but an author, yeah. Do you have other descriptors?
Oh, languid and interesting. No.
Hot and tot hottie.
Well, I still think of myself a little bit as a cartoonist, yeah. Because I illustrate my own books, even yes. though I'm not, and I don't, it's that often female thing, isn't it, where I go, oh, I'm not doing it every day, and I, because
I really...
Because I had a family, so I couldn't concentrate on you know, cartooning, and like my colleagues in cartooning are just such great drafts people and do amazing work every day. And But bugger it, I'm still going to call myself a cartoonist.
100%.
As well. And yeah, you're right. I started as a journalist as a baby apprentice at the age when I was a month off my 18th birthday.
Wow.
Yeah. So it really was very young.
Yeah.
And I love journalism. I still take a real interest in it. And journalism drives most of my books. I couldn't do books like Up the Duff and Girl Stuff without having, and I tell you what, journalism does, I reckon, for me anyway, and I know for a lot of other people back then in the 80s, if you're shy or if you, like me, came from a really daggy suburban background and there were other people from uni and they were so sophisticated and sleeping with a couple of deputy editors and all of that kind of caper, and I was like, and at one point the a restaurant critic hit on me and said, can I take you to lunch? And, I said, no, it's okay. I bought my own Rivita. But what journalism does is it gives you, if you're shy or you don't feel like you're, I mean, I'd never spoken to anyone who I would have considered important. Yeah, and then we're at press conferences, you know, reporting courts, being frightened all the time that you would get something wrong.
Yeah.
But it gave me a way to, and so that later on I could bring up the top doctor in something and say, hi, can you tell me what the truth is of this? And then once I'd built up hopefully a little bit of a reputation with, especially with Real Gorgeous, which was about body image, and then Up the Duff.
Up the Duff, yeah.
That I think doctors, medical experts, psychiatrists understood that I was serious, you know, that I wrote funny books.
Yeah.
And still to this day, some people get it confused and think I only write funny books. Or,
yes. Well, we like to pigeonhole, don't we?
Yeah.
And I think particularly that's a particular problem with anyone who's funny, you know, because people kind of can't see past the humour to the intellect.
I bet you get this too. They say to you, oh, it's really good what you do because you're sugar coating. And I sort of look at them and I think, no, I need the sense of ridiculous. I need to relate to people. Yeah. I need to make a joke and laugh with people.
Yeah.
If I'm not in the room when they read it, hopefully they will laugh. I'm careful. You know, there are sections in my books about things like miscarriage and mental health. I'm very careful.
You know the line. You know the line. And it's that, for me, it's like that's disarming. It's connection. It is a way to level the playing field, you know, rather than like so many books on the subjects that you have written are completely inaccessible. It's just a tool of communication that you're really good at.
Well, and also I am very much the lowest common denominator. So I need to understand it before I can interpret. I don't write books because I'm a guru and I know everything. I write them because I don't know and I go and find out.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you do this too, and we're not slathering a pill in ice cream and shoving it.
No, not at all.
Throats. We're just going, let's share this information because we all have a right to the knowledge that we need. Yeah.
And I'm okay to talk about it. I think that's the difference. You know, it's that walking toward the hard subjects. You know, I have that thing all the time of people, particularly because I do so many events in like family violence and homelessness and, you know, child abuse and they're like, what are you doing getting a comedian? And then, I mean, this is toot, but, you know, once they see it, they go, oh, I get it. I get it.
Yeah, and you've got to be good at it. I've seen people try and do it.
Oh, yes.
Experience or without empathy or without thinking about it. Anyway, we're magnificent. I think that's
I think that's the short story.
Now, we try.
You share as much or as little as you want, but usually we start the podcast with your relationships history. So can we start now? What is your status, Kaz? Are you on the market?
I'm extremely single.
Yeah.
I really can't see much point in, as you say, being on the market.
Yeah.
I'm very leery of, I don't know if it's laziness or anxiety, but I don't want to go through 99 dates to find someone who's great.
Yeah.
And I sort of can't bear the idea of meeting people I don't know. And I was very bruised by the end of a 24-year-old relationship a few years ago. And I really can't say that much about that because I have a daughter and you often don't want to make those things public. But all I'll say is it absolutely flattened me for quite some time.
Yeah, it hurt.
There were things about it that I mean, the main feeling was blindsided and shocked. But what it had the horrible side effect was that I didn't know how to trust myself or my own judgment.
Yes. That's the biggest thing, I think, when my own experience and the experience of so many callers is, as you get more distance from relationships, and that could be relationships that are romantic, friends, family, like a whole range of them, and you start to go, oh, God, I tolerated that, or I misread that, or I thought they were this sort of person. And that insight can help you moving forward, but it's also such a punch in the guts because you're like, I wasn't 20.
Yeah. Oh, no. I relate to every millisecond of what you just said. But also for me, which is very unlike me, I was like, I can't choose a beige color. I can't be between Dulux fourth and Dulux khaki. Like, what do I know? I didn't see that. What? And so.
Yeah. And it's particularly hard, I think, when you are a person who loosely works in this area, you know, like our bread and butter is relationships in the broad sense of the word. And then you kind of go, oh shit, I missed a couple of things, didn't I? Oh dear.
So I've done quite a bit of therapy. Then I had a break. Now I've just gone back to deal with some other stuff. And I've found all of that incredibly useful.
Yeah.
But looking back further than that, you know, I know what the way that you talk in this podcast, and I thought, oh, it is confronting to have to look at, because I think mostly I had a series of absolute duds that I shouldn't have been with. And I saw
talking like teens, 20s?
Oh, right up until my early 30s when I got together with the father of my child.
Yeah, yeah.
And really had probably most relationships were about 18 months long, if that.
Mm.
So didn't work out for some reason. But you know what I was thinking? And I just want to give a real shout out to younger people, like people the age of our sort of kids.
Kids, yeah.
They are so much better at understanding inclusivity and the moral imperative of who you're with and why. And when I was that young journalist of just turned 18, so I'm a month off being in a school uniform now.
You're a kid. Yeah.
And a 27-year-old at work became my boyfriend.
Yeah.
And I was the dad. I was a dag. Yeah. I didn't know. I kind of thought if someone's interested in me, then I should come to the party.
Same. Oh, Kaz, don't.
And, you know, that.
Don't. Incredible. That's the worst
you
one.
You think you're a young feminist and there's that stuff going on. I don't think I really chose
until
my early 30s, and I chose someone who I thought would be a good dad, and they were.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, the rest of it. I mean, I was thinking about that recently and talking to my daughter who's studying but also doing a job, and she, you know, she talks to me about what her friends are saying, and they are much less likely to go an 18-year-old with a real, like somebody who's 30.
Oh, yeah.
They're onto it.
Been taught more, and they're more, I think they talk more openly. Like I hear my 16-year-old, same, like that group of friends, and they will talk about, they will use words like power imbalance.
Yeah, I know. I love it. And it is so, they're so much more sophisticated about different kinds of sexuality, different gender, different emotional states, neurodiversity.
Yeah.
For many of them, I think, you know, there's this trope I've done a lot of research because I love it. I love being in an archive and, you know, looking at what was happening in the 18th, 19th, 20th century, you know, the history of women. And there is this trope of the unprotected woman.
Yes.
And I think a lot of our kids' generation have been very protected in one way, like where are you going, who are you with, you know, but also, you know, much more respected by their parents, young people respecting their parents more. We are closer as a generation than my generation is to parents, for example.
Yeah,
That
totally
gap
agree.
is very different.
Yeah. I
Society.
reckon one of the key differences, hopefully that I do, but also that I observe, is that parents of our generation are more likely to apologize, right?
Oh,
To
you've done it.
go, I got it wrong. Like parents
Yes.
of our gen, obviously we're generalizing, but parents of our generation, I think even if they knew they got something wrong, it'd be hold the line, like I'm the one in
And
charge.
yeah, I mean, that's fascinating because I have apologized and I think it means so much
It does. It
to our kids'
makes you much
generation.
closer.
Yeah.
Much, much. I think that's why
Well,
those
it's also,
conversations happen.
there's also some of it that I go, if they end up being parents themselves, they're going to be, and the older they get, the more they're going to be, oh no, I get why I wasn't allowed to go to that.
Oh, no,
You know, rather
totally.
than the. So it's a
Totally.
give and take, it's a discussion, it's a
Yeah. Yeah.
and anyway, I didn't have any of that when I was
No.
18. So,
No.
and I shouldn't have been in that relationship. And in that workplace, there are a lot of, I was like a big dag and little, you know, my bravita. There were a lot of other young women who were with powerful men in the office, and that I found that completely bizarre. But it was a buffet bonanza for those older men.
Oh, no
It
shit.
happened in so many different workplaces. I don't think it's the same in journalism now, but we're talking about a floor of 80 people with typewriters and cigarettes in the early 80s.
Madmen.
And I look back at that, and sometimes at night you'd be the only woman on the floor because when I first started, it was all male sub-editors working late. And that's when I started wearing a bra because they were watching me walk around delivering
Oh,
stuff. And I thought, oh,
Kaz.
I'm going to wear a bra, even
And
though I
then
don't.
when you've got that combination, because I experienced that even at uni, like before work, you know, the little country bumpkin kind of, I was 17 and arrived at uni and I'd never
Yeah, there
known
you
anyone
go.
who'd been at uni, you know, all that. And of
Yeah.
course, like I same, I ended up in a relationship with the guy who was 28, you know, and I look back at that, my daughter's 16. I'm like, I'd fucking murder you, mate. Like, you go
I know. And one of my relatives, in the generation above me,
Yeah.
married a local school teacher
Yeah.
she was 16. And I just read Wendy Harmer's book, and her mother at 16 married the local school teacher. Oh my God, what
Yeah.
was, I'm
Yeah.
so glad all that. So anyway, that I think that was my sort of first, I didn't really know what was going on
Yeah,
at
yeah,
the
yeah.
time.
And I
And
think for this sort of, again, speaking generationally, because I know that there's a lot of people listening who would look back with the same gut punch of kind of going, oh, yes, I just thought it was enough that they liked me. Because you've got this sort of, and I'm being very careful with words, but I mean, the only way I can think of it is we almost have like a cultural grooming at that age of anyone likes you is good enough. Right, you need validation, you need external, even for young feminists then, like 80s and 90s, there was still this sort of yearning for approval because fuck knows we'd grown up like that, you know, and it's a real process of unlearning that.
I had a family who told me implicitly and explicitly, if you're with a boyfriend, you're
Yeah,
protected. And
totally.
that, not that guy that I was with, but other guys treated me badly. But because my parents had said, you're safe when you've got a boyfriend, you can go out with a boyfriend, but you can't go out by yourself, I would have been a million times safer with a group of girlfriends. So
100%.
I think I'm really glad all that has changed. And even though there's a part of me that thinks I know so much more now, not because I'm brilliant, but just from the
From
weight of the
life.
years
Yeah,
of
from
experience,
life.
I would probably would be better at choosing someone now.
Yeah, I
But
reckon.
I don't, I,
You're not there.
but also, even if I was there, where am I going to do that? Like, all my friends are women or gay men or some male friends, but they're with their partners. Yeah. And I certainly, I don't know about you, but I have a complete off switch. If somebody is with a, if a man is with a friend of mine,
yeah,
I find him quite repellent.
Oh, yeah. And any friend.
You know what I mean? Like there's no, there's no attraction whatsoever. Finally.
And if I've friend zoned someone, like if I've met someone as a friend, you know, there's no way that that for me doesn't just change if they become single or I become single or it's like they're in a particular place in my brain.
And you know what? It's too simple, but there's something about I'm more interested now in being happy than with someone. So trying to feel that my little flat that I bought is a sanctuary.
Mm.
And that I can relax and I don't even know that I would want someone
in it
in my space very often.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Don't put your whole thing on the table without a coaster. It's not it's just being fine with your own company, the way you've organized things.
Yeah.
You might
and
want
it's
to
calmness. You know, there's a certain kind of there's a certain peace in it. Like I know when my long-term relationship ended for me, and I've talked about this before, but the most exciting part, because obviously it's devastating and it's sad and all the other things, but when you start to see the positives, I'm like laying in my bed by myself watching TV is like peak happiness. I'm a simple girl. You know what I mean? I'm like, this kind of and learning to love my own company. I mean, I've always liked my own company, but really learning to love it and go, I'm really content.
And I think we're all so too busy. That is an ungrammatical sentence, but we are so too busy.
Yeah.
And so the downtime, if you're
it's lovely.
You are only introvert, extrovert, whatever, but I like to recharge.
Yeah.
And so
yeah.
And choose when to be with my friends.
Mm.
I'm going to a party in a couple of weeks and I have no idea how to do that anymore. I think it's years since I've, because of
COVID. You know what's going to happen, Kaz? You're going to meet someone and the next time I interview, you're going to go, I'm engaged.
Well, I've never been married.
Me either.
That's a different.
But
there was a time when I would have.
Yeah.
But. And it
that
was
time's gone. Oh, you know what? We try really hard. Like one of the things I'm trying to do with this podcast is actually honor that decision. Like there is a whole movement at LTS, long-term single. We've had a couple of people on, or more than a couple, who are just like, you know what? I don't want to go back in. I'm happy in my own company. This is what I want. They may or may not miss sex. They may or may not have opportunities for that. But in terms of relationships, they're like, I'm done. Like I've given it a crack.
And we get our nurturing and our sustenance from our friends.
From your coven.
And around the cauldron. And and the generation above us, I've noticed that so many men partner up again quickly if they're widowed or something happens. And a lot of women do too, but there's many women who don't. And there's that phrase, I don't want to be a nurse or a purse.
Yep.
The older, you know, and I think this is one of the first couple of generations in a middle class, lucky, wealthy country where women are able to
have that choice.
But of course, it's coming back to bite many women. There must be many women now who don't want to get out of a relationship because it's going to mean a change. To precarious housing, for example.
Oh, 100%. The stats are completely clear on that. And that's where I think as we get older too, get more nuanced. Like if someone had said to me 20 years ago, oh, well, I won't leave because I am worried about the rent, I would have been stridently judgmental. You know, like if you are not happy in your relationship, you need to leave. Da, da, da. And now from this age, I kind of go, I'm not happy about it for you. You know, and it's wrong.
But I get
But I get it.
Anyway, that's a long way of saying I've had a series of catastrophically disastrous relationships and I probably should treat it like food poisoning and stay well away from it. Lest I have the same reaction.
Oh, it's a real thing, Kaz, isn't it? Where you start to kind of go, do I don't know, I waver between thinking, do I just choose wrong? Or then thinking, no, actually reframe it and kind of go, you know what, you could have a relationship for a few weeks or 30 years and there will be positives and negatives in both.
And, yeah, and some things are good for a while and then they're not.
Yeah, that's right, and it shit happens.
That's very philosophical, darling.
That's my current mood. Now, I want to talk about your latest book. Mm-hmm. It is fabulous. Give us the plug and then I'll ask you some questions.
So it's called It's the Menopause.
Stories. Jesus.
It's for women aged in their 40s, 50s and beyond.
Yes.
I did a survey of almost 9,000 women. And yes. So a lot of the book is like a conversation in speech bubbles between those yeah. women about various aspects yeah. of the menopause, their thoughts, their the things they cross about, the things that work for them, the things they're confused about.
Yeah.
And then I also talked to a whole bunch of really fantastic menopause, hormone, yes. psychiatric experts. Yeah. Australia is bejeweled with such yes. fabulous people.
Yes.
And there hasn't been enough research, but that is starting to change. So it's a book kind of in the tradition of my other books, like here's what you need to know.
Mm.
It's written in a very friendly way, but the information is all checked. And then there's a point at which I go off like a box of fireworks about all the stuff that we're told, you know, the wellness stuff with no evidence.
Yeah.
You know, I go take what you need from medicine if you can take it and you want to, take the self-help ideas that have evidence behind them, and there's so much evidence for some of that, but there's a lot of stuff that is marketing, and it's cynical, and it's celebrities selling stuff, and so it's a book that has useful lists about, you know, this is what you can ask your GP, and if your GP is not treating you properly, then find another one and ask
another one.
And here's here's a page of. Don't just Google a symptom, because in the first 10 results, you'll get seven of people trying to flog you something.
So
here are the good people and the good
trusted. You've done the research
for us. Yeah, the trusted websites and stuff. Yeah.
Like I think the way my experience of reading it, I mean, I'm right in it, right? So it's completely relevant.
In the book or in the menopause?
Both.
Yeah.
Both. And I think what's fabulous, and it's the same with your other books, it's to me, this is your signature. It's like you have done that journalistic deep dive, proper research, but you've also got, I love the little speech bubbles because there will be someone who'll go, and I'll be like, yes, that's me. And then someone else, I'm like, what are you on? And that's actually great. Like, that's actually part of the conversation. Same with birth, pregnancy, parenting. You know, puberty, all the things. Like, there is no one experience.
Well, if it's right off on the edge, I'll say so after the quote. Yeah, like, there's one woman who said, if you eat yellow vegetables, you won't go through the menopause. I did actually have to have a little line in brackets after that. But, I mean, some of the quotes are so funny. Some of them are so useful. Some of them are so angry.
Yeah, but I like that. I like it.
Yeah,
I actually like it's a truth, it's a honest part of the experience of change of any kind is that, you know, and we have been trained out of being angry. I mean, obviously we don't go and punch anybody, but express the rage. Like, it's good, get it out, name it to tame it, all that stuff.
That's great.
I think it's great. Interesting, I thought I'd share with you, which I haven't shared on the podcast before, when I started experiencing perimenopausal symptoms, I went to a GP, long story short, you would have heard this 100 times, did a blood test and went, oh, I don't think so. And I'm like, I'm really suffering. Like, I've got this, and this. And she's like,
how old are you, Nelly?
48. Mm. And she's like, oh, no, it's too soon.
Oh,
I find this fascinating, right? I'm talking to a trans friend of mine, and obviously anyone who's been through transition knows a shitload about hormones.
Yeah.
And he said to me, nah, mate, like, you need to go and see a doctor who's got, like, more nuanced understanding of hormones, why would you suffer, you know, blah, blah, blah. And once I went to her, she actually said, I don't care about your blood test. I want to know your symptoms.
And neither she should. Exactly. Oh, I'm so glad you found her, because that's exactly right. What are your symptoms and what will work for you?
Yes. Let's try this. Did all the blood pressure and all the rest of it, and then, you know, went on the patches and noticed a significant shift in my mental health.
Yeah.
Like, it had been a shit show.
And for that, there are a lot of people who can't take hormonal medication.
Yeah.
For their own reasons, but they're often then just sent away with nothing. And yes. There are all sorts of alternatives.
Yes.
And that thing of you're too young to be going through perimenopause, which, and just for people who might be a little confused, perimenopause is the time leading up to or around the menopause, which is technically you've had your last period and it's more than a year since then. But that's not actually very useful.
No.
And so doctors kind of concentrate on this idea of when is the day, and that's like date. Past two on a Thursday, July, you're in the menopause. But if you've been having mental symptoms, hot flushes, weeing when you don't want to be weeing, you know, or a really crazy long periods that are so unpredictable,
sweating through your sheets, anxiety,
don't talk about or don't know about. And a lot of the women in the survey for the book said, it's only reading your list of symptoms to tell you that I've realized that, like, itchy skin.
Yes, same.
Has to do, and sore joints, like you're getting arthritis. And,
and
not everyone gets all these symptoms. Everybody's very different. But it just still upsets me to hear that someone is giving a blood test to someone who is right in the age zone. Because blood tests, because your hormones are not, they don't go along and then fall off a cliff, like a graph.
No, exactly.
Straight, and then it's more like the ABC logo. So it's up, down, around, and backwards, and then starts again. And so your symptoms change from month to month, day to day, minute to minute. So having a blood test when you're 48 is not useful. Having a blood test, if you're trying to work out if you've got early menopause before the age of 40, that's a good time to have a blood test, because if you've got no significant levels of estrogen showing up before 40, then you're going to need to do some medical stuff to protect your bones and your heart and all of that. And
the second doctor said to me, I'd need to blood test you on the hour for a week every day to get a real indication.
Even then you might change. So these are the kind of things that I wanted to let women know in the menopause, because it was sort of, I had that incredibly, again, common experience of when I was about 45 going to the doctor saying, I've lost confidence, I can't find words, I feel brain fog, all of the classic early perimenopause symptoms.
Yeah.
And I was put on antidepressants, and this is a story that is repeated over and over. And I now look back, and I think antidepressants or anti-anxiety medication is great, and I've been on it at other times, but right then I did not need that. I needed to spend more than 2 minutes in a surgery and have more investigation done, and I needed to be on what's called MHT now instead of HRT, which just means menopause hormone therapy.
Yes.
Because HRT means hormone replacement therapy, and that's an acronym that's much more common now in other, you know, hormonal situations.
Well, I think one of the most validating things about the second GP as well is that she said to me, you know, sometimes the mental health symptoms that come with menopause are dismissed as though you come in and you go, well, I'm losing confidence and I'm anxious and I'm not usually and I can't sleep and blah, blah, blah. She's like, why aren't we taking those seriously?
Yeah.
As seriously as my joints hurt.
Yeah.
Like, it's important.
Totally agree.
Overall health is the big picture.
Oh, and so many women think they're going through early dementia.
Yeah,
they're fighting with their older kids at home. They may be in that squished generation between doing stuff for the elderly generation. They've got young kids at home. And also I think sometimes we attribute everything to menopause or perimenopause. Yes. And sometimes it's just that we're We have many women have found themselves in a situation where, for example, I've spoken to women who are still doing the laundry and cooking for kids who have left home and come home because of the rental
houses, or
have stayed at home.
Yeah.
They're in their 20s. They're still doing it for usually a male partner.
Yeah.
One of the things I say in the menopause book is show these symptoms to your partner. Tell them that you might have any, or but you won't have all of them. But, you know, that this is what's happening in menopause. And these ones here, anxiety, rage, you know, feeling overwhelmed, it's time to redo the chore chart or instigate one in the house, implement one, and say everyone does their own washing. Everyone is responsible either for some kind of roster for cooking, or I'm going to cook for myself. I'm not cooking for everybody else. I'm not cleaning up after people.
I'm not planning Christmas. I'm not doing all the thing. Because part of it, I think, we do attribute it all to menopause, but part of it is literally just, you know, all of us by this age have had a friend die prematurely or family members, or you start to reckon with your own mortality. And if you're sitting there going, fuck, why am I doing everyone's washing? And now potentially my kids have had kids and I'm doing their washing. Like, when does the washing stop?
Yeah.
You know? And I think for a lot of women, they just go, no, enough. And people turn around and, oh, you know, it's the menopause and you're crazy. No, no, I've had enough.
Yeah. And I do joke in the book, because I sort of think there's a bit of truth in it, that estrogen is the hormone that stops you from murdering husbands.
Yeah.
And so
when I noted that joke. Yes.
When that dynamic of doing everything, plus you've got the rage of your hormones during perimenopause, you know, I think you get all those jokes about, oh, women go crazy, and there is a discrimination. And based on the idea, it's the same thing, right, as women are hysterical, women turn into witches. It's just a different variation delivered, you know, instead of from the pulpit by a monk, you know, by Friar Tuck.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
It comes through social media.
And apparently I've been crazy every month since I was 13.
Yeah.
You know,
and some people are. So some people have got, you know, a dysphoric.
PMDD, all that stuff. Yeah.
Too long to work it out. I think GPs are going to have to come up to speed pretty fast. And I'm hoping that a book like this will help them.
It will, because you will go in with, it's a different thing to go in with a well-researched resource rather than go, I've Googled it. You know, if you can go in and kind of go, actually, about, say, in my case with the blood test thing, actually, you know, can you look at my list of symptoms or whatever? Can you tell me, in the context of this podcast, because we get a lot of questions from women or, you know, people really in general, because I think everyone should read the book, and I'm not just saying that. Like, I think I'm going to get one of my oldest daughter to read it for sure, so that at least she can understand, like, she's going through puberty.
Yeah.
I'm going through menopause at the same time in the house.
Yeah.
She needs to understand me and vice versa.
Well, I think, you know, there's much more information about puberty now.
Yes.
And one of those things, especially.
We've got all your books, Kaz. We've done that. But I want her to understand me too.
Yes.
Right? Because I'm changing.
And also, women themselves don't know what to expect. They think that their periods will just stop. And one of the things that I think is very interesting is that girls approaching puberty know from watching other girls, know from information, whether it's my book or whatever, that their bodies are going to change.
Change, yes.
We older women are not really told that our fat distribution will change forever, and it's not something that the medication will change. So that fat going on around the middle, and I'm now in the process of, I need a whole new wardrobe, because I don't have the waist that I had anymore.
Yeah. Same. Yeah.
And I used to also look at older women and think, oh, they really don't bother about their hair, do they?
Yeah.
Like, I didn't realize that your hair goes foofy at the front because it's sort of more breakable and more.
And can thin and all sorts of that, let alone. So we get a number, we've had a number of calls about changes, sexual changes during menopause. And one of the ones that stood out for me was a woman had vaginal atrophy. And once I went and looked into it, I'm like, I didn't even know that this could happen in menopause, that your clitoris could shrink, for example.
Yeah, so the clitoris can shrink. You get a very dry vagina. And I hate the term vaginal atrophy.
Yes, I know.
It's like those medical terms like an incompetent cervix. Get stuffed.
Yeah. I was a geriatric mother.
Yes, me too.
I get the terminology shit, but I think
women are told you've got vaginal atrophy and you go home thinking you've got a wizened little old walnut between your legs.
It's like then the contrast to that, Kaz, I reckon, is that, for example, in my, you know, friends when we're talking, and once I started talking about that caller, and there were quite a few of us who were like, oh, it's a lot harder for me to orgasm, for example, than it used to be.
So
and you could just think, oh, I am prudish, or there's something wrong with me, or it's in my head. And you go, actually, there's some physical change. You need something different.
And in most of the media stories about menopause, there's this kind of a bias towards the idea that women lose their libido and that's not fair to men. And you will notice that no one ever suggests that a man takes a pill to make him not want sex and not bother his wife who's lost interest. But then some women do lose interest in sex, some don't. Mm. But what is not said in those, you know, short TV pieces and magazine website style pieces is that, and this is where the quotes in the book come in, what women are actually experiencing is that sex that they used to enjoy now feels like razor blades.
Yeah.
That friction, it does feel like sandpaper. It does feel absolutely awful. And they've just, and if their partner's not into changing and talking, women are often just told, yeah, that's how it is.
Mm.
It's a very simple thing to do to create lubrication using a product. Again, you've got to use one, and that's all in the book about which lubrication's best. But also, many people who've had cancer and are told they can't have hormone medication, so they can't take oral estrogen. And but what they can do very, very often is shoot that little bit of hormonal cream up into their vagina with a little plastic plunger. Once or twice a week or whatever works for them, and then their vagina absorbs that estrogen, and it also helps the bladder, so that sticky wee business where we're more likely to cough, sneeze, and other wee problems, that estrogen they've discovered can really help women with vaginal dryness and wee problems. And yet I would say a minority of women are told that.
Circling back to the snippets you mentioned on the news, it'll always be, oh, you know, she's lost the horn. You're like, even at the less sort of, for some people, obviously, it'd be really painful to have sexual contact. I think what I notice, just, and I'm talking about in my own peer group, it's not so much that, it's that their sexual needs have changed. What they need to orgasm has changed. Can your partner adapt to that? Do they take it personally? Can you even have that conversation? Like we talk, for example, about sex toys. There's plenty of women who reach a certain age or maybe their whole life can only orgasm with a vibrator.
Yeah.
Is that something your partner will accommodate?
Or wield, I think, is the word you're looking for.
Or wield. Oh, he's got his pen license.
But the thing I really want to warn people about, Nelly, is this: do not ever, ever be sucked into this idea of laser treatment on your vagina.
No,
the Mona Lisa touch these other ridiculous names given to, I tell you what, if Mona Lisa had laser treatment on her vagina, that would not be the expression on her face.
No.
She's looking a lot more furious. Because we know it doesn't do anything. There's no evidence that it makes your vagina. What it does is give you low-level burns on the inside of your vagina so that your body then tries to heal itself, and then the vagina might be slicker during that. Hundreds and hundreds of dollars. And it, what really cemented,
it's an injury.
So every major, you know, membership organization with specialist doctors for women, gynecologists, obstetricians, everybody who knows, who is acquainted with the vaginal area, says this is just useless.
Absolute bullshit. Like so many other things that we told, and you know, as you have documented in many of your books, basically if you make us feel bad about something,
yes,
we are
right.
vulnerable to purchasing.
Yeah.
So I mean, to me, the short story is just do not, like, don't even Google it. If you know someone who's in menopause or is approaching it, or like I said, I reckon I want my daughter to read it because I want her to know what I'm going through, but also I want her to have information before she gets there.
Yeah.
And actually follow, it's well researched, you can trust it. And I love, because I've got a huge wellness bee in my bonnet, I love the debunking stuff.
Yeah.
Because you're really vulnerable to someone going, hey, try this thing.
Desiccated green powder.
Because you're desperate.
Yeah. See, there is really good evidence for exercise. That's a self-help thing.
And it's free.
Yeah. You know, the women and non-binary people and trans people, depending on when their transition is, going through perimenopause, what can you do? What will help you? What will fit with your philosophy, or what will challenge your philosophy? There are some people who go, oh, exercise, natural, there's no natural thing that can help. And there
are. What are you going to lose if you exercise? You're going to feel better anyway.
But some people can't do, but they're often told, do 3 hours at the gym. They can't do that.
On.
So I've given them other things that they might be easier to shoehorn into your life. But
and they're not, buy this expensive rock and put it up your jacksie.
Thank you, Gwyneth.
Now, are you ready, Kaz, for a couple of listener calls? Because I'd love your take.
Hi, Nellie. It's Kim from Geelong. I wanted to say thank you to producer Sammy, because when I was listening to his episode, I got the biggest surprise when you were talking about the listener call, the lady who had the heart surgery and the scar. And I was thinking to myself, oh, that's like me with my Bell's palsy and my wonky mouth. And then Sammy started talking about having facial palsy, and I was so taken aback. And it was so wonderful and comforting to hear someone say, yeah, well, that's part of me and no big deal. So I have got back on the dating apps recently, and it is hard not to apologise for having a wonky face, but your podcast is definitely so empowering and helpful. And, yes, special thanks to Sam for sharing that. Bye.
Oh, Kaz.
Oh, my lordy, isn't that?
Eldra, I'll give you the background. So, long story short, this fabulous woman rang in. She'd had open heart surgery. She decided to, get back out there, start dating. From memory, she was late 40s, early 50s. Brave, putting herself out there. She has a 10-centimeter scar, right? Not even like a cesarean scar size on her chest. The guy had sex with her once or twice, as far as I can remember. And then, this enrages me, messaged her later, basically saying, that was a bit off-putting. I can't do that again. Absolutely. Don't even. Right? Everyone's mind's blowing.
So I think the thing about this is, A, everyone's got something wonky.
Yeah.
Of some description, mental, physical, and getting that out and up front and saying, you're going to waste far less time.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you're going to get the nice people who don't mind, the people who like you for you.
Mm.
But I think it is brave.
Mm.
I think it is brave to talk about. It's a bit like, don't you think? It's a bit like if you start to talk to someone about, for example, mental health issues in families.
Mm.
Everybody's got, God knows.
Oh my Lord! Yeah, once you disclose, I can say that. Yeah.
But if nobody's saying anything,
yeah,
then everyone thinks that everyone else is. I mean, I do get it that facial difference is so out there.
Mm.
You know, it's not like, you know, a scar that's not always visible.
Mm.
But no, without being too much of a wanker, everyone's carrying scars, and it's quite clear that guy is carrying a mental scar that's going to get in the way of him having fun and being happy.
Mm. So, I mean, there are a couple of things. One, I don't believe him. I think he just wanted to fucking run, and he used the excuse, like he was attracted enough to her to have sex with her a couple of times. So, you know, the idea that a 10 scar. But also, I think, to me, it's like at our age, if we're talking about dating over 40, are you, even just on a superficial level, you are not going to meet anyone who doesn't have scars, stretch marks, other physical so-called imperfections. Like, we have human bodies.
I do think that we don't know what other people's motivations are. I think some people can be really just thoughtless and quite stupid, like really quite dim.
Yeah.
And it's good to know that up front and early.
Yeah.
And other people, I think, like at school, when you remember that the mean people, the bullies, would pick on something that they thought was obviously, and if they couldn't see anything, they'd call you fat, or they'd call you a slut or whatever. They would, I think some people do feel better when they put other people down. And yeah, again, let's find that out really quickly. And so I really admire this woman, because this is the stuff that I don't want to go through. This is why I wouldn't do dating, because I just don't want to have 50 of those before I find someone nice. I'd happy to be parachuted in.
Yeah.
I don't want to put the work in, you know.
You're happy for me to set you up is what the short story here is. So I'm opening my little black book. But you're right, it's vulnerable. It's vulnerable for me as well. It's vulnerable for anyone who's putting themselves back out there. And at this age, your body is not, even if you've never had the conventional body, your body is different.
I can honestly say Bell's palsy or a chest scar in someone else wouldn't put me off for a second.
No, me either.
It would be about, you know, do they make me laugh?
Yeah.
More importantly, Nelly, do they laugh at my jokes? I mean,
100%. Can you flirt?
Let's be fair.
Is there connection? All of that kind of stuff. You know what I love, what I hear in this caller as well? I love that she has mentioned that tension between disclosure of whatever it is, but also not being apologetic for yourself, right? So don't kind of lead with, oh, I'm so sorry, I've got Bell's palsy. No, are you like okay with that?
Also, I think assess who you're with.
Yeah.
And if you don't feel safe to disclose, then don't. You don't owe anybody anything.
Hey, Nelly. I loved your and Sammy's comments on my last update about travelling overseas with someone that I'd only been going out with for 3 months prior to the overseas trip. I am in my early 60s, and we were seeing each other multiple nights a week, as well as times during the day, because we don't have parent or work commitments anymore, so there's more free time to spend together. The trip went really well. The 8 weeks that we spent together were amazing, and we were very loved up and having a fabulous time, until we met up with his family for the last 2 weeks. And that's when the dynamics changed, and basically it all went to shit. It just really changed when I saw the way that he behaved with his daughter and grandchildren, and didn't prioritise me, and I felt really excluded. So we broke up once we arrived back home, and I still haven't given up hope of finding a partner who's compatible. So after a week, I went back onto the apps and I've luckily met someone else who seems like it's going to go well with. So we've actually been dating for only 2 weeks. I have a trip planned for June next year, again in Europe, and I'm going to just see how it goes up until then, because I do think that travelling is a really good test of a relationship, and at my age, I feel like it's quite good to fast track the compatibility testing, because I would like to find a companion to spend the rest of my life with. So it's a good way to test the relationship, I think. So basically, I haven't given up hope, and I'm still really enjoying all of your guests and their insight and your insight into relationships, and it's a fabulous community. So thanks, Nellie.
What are your, can I say, first of all, lady in her 60s dating, high fives all round. Like, I just love, if you want to, I love the idea that she's going, this is actually something I want. I'm going to be proactive about it. No one's going to come and knock on my door and ask me out on a date. So good on her. But what do you hear?
I'm terrified of her. Yes. I mean, look, there's a lot to unpack. Yeah, I don't make a joke about traveling and compatibility, but there is a lot to unpack there. I think it's true that traveling together, but that is a very early, very stressful stress test.
Yes.
To put on a relationship. Everyone's different, right? And I think I think what you've said, she knows what she wants. That's really important. Because I think if I was going out with, this is all completely hypothetical, but if I was going out with someone who showed a great deal of love and affinity to their children and grandchildren, I would love to see that.
Mm.
But I don't know what happened here. I don't know whether she was put in a corner or didn't want.
Yeah.
So she knows what she wants. She wants the undivided attention of somebody.
I had the same response, Kaz, to that particular part. I thought, I wish I had more information, because seeing someone who's really loving and devoted to their people to me is a huge green flag. But I have also in a couple of dating situations been, you know, don't put baby in the corner.
If I make a study of anything, it's problem pages, and they are shockers with people going, my partner is still enmeshed with their mother, father, siblings who run their life, and I am, and the classic one is when they do a family photo, I'm asked to stand aside.
Oh, yes, I've been in that before.
So, I'm like you, I would, but also the idea of being with someone for 2 weeks and then deciding to travel with them to Europe. I mean, that, you know, like, yeah, not letting the grass grow there.
No.
I wouldn't feel even safe doing that.
No. I think what she's saying, though, is she's got a trip plan. So presumably that's now. She's got a trip plan next June. I think she's saying if we're still dating, I would take him.
Yeah.
And see how that went. I mean, when she first rang in, Sammy was co-hosting. Sammy and I were both like, don't go on the trip. Like, the idea of being stuck for me, even in another state, like, let alone in Europe.
Look, I'm just going to come out and say it. How do you poo?
Yeah.
if you don't know somebody very well and you're in a hotel, you know, I was in a hotel room, thankfully alone recently. There was a glass wall between the toilet and
nightmare. Absolute nightmare. No, I'm with you. Do you know I think Wes Snelling is a mutual friend of ours. You know who Wes is?
Big fan of his, but I don't know him well. Yeah.
So I have a caravan, right? And Wes and I go and hang out in the caravan. And it's so great, the difference between being with an old friend compared to a date. I'm just like, need to do a poo. He's like, got it. And, like, we don't even have to say it. It's just like a hand signal. You need to go for a walk now. And I go, okay. And both of us are exactly the same. It's like it's a bloody hotel room, basically.
Yeah, no, awful. But But that is the state that you want to get to in a relationship,
yes.
I think,
yes.
to be able to, yes. you know. But look, I think this woman doesn't need our help, right?
No,
I
agree.
She knows exactly what she's doing.
She's doing her thing.
Yeah. And good. Yep. But what I would say is good luck, everybody.
Yeah. All right. So two segments to end, beautiful Kaz Cook. We have No Shade on My Ex, where you get to tell me stupid shit that an ex has done. It can be trivial. It can be serious. It can be whatever you want it to be. But like when you look back and you go, oh, come on.
Okay, my three are all red flags.
Great.
First one is I went out with a man who I think we'd been together about 3 months, and he told me the names that he would like to name our three mythical children.
What were they?
I can't tell you because he went on to have three children called the three names.
Oh, no.
Woman.
With another woman. So he just had three names picked out. Regardless of who you were?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
So anyway, I did Scarpa.
Of course.
The other one is I was going out with, I was living with somebody and I came home from one of my many at the time endometriosis operations.
Yeah.
Got into bed and was still very, it was the sort of, you know, laparotomy where you would, you know, have to crouch over and go to the loo, and and he went out that night.
Oh, no.
So that was the red flag. And the other one was someone I'd been with for some time who started to walk in front of me, not next to me. When we
Yes, Kaz, good pickup.
And I thought, what is, it was actually one of the first signs of he physically didn't want to be with me. He was physically walking towards something else. And I'm not an oogie boogie person.
Yeah, no, but that's a tell. I'll pay that. I 100% will pay that.
Yeah. So those were my three.
In the first case, that's someone moving too hard, and also to me, who that would indicate a kind of level of delusional fantasy that's got nothing to do with me. Like, well, I want three children.
Yeah. And
regardless of whether you're involved. Yeah.
Which I didn't know at the time, but I just thought it was pretty weird that he picked out names.
That's
but
weird.
I also think it's a tell of, you know, sometimes I remember a woman saying to me once, I'm going to have two children. I'm going to have a girl and then a boy.
Yes.
You don't get to order that.
Yes. No.
Like people have, they haven't even realized that their very firm idea about their future, there's a million things that are going to fuck with that.
And what other fantasies do you have that you're going to project onto me in this relationship? That's what would concern me. Yes, you know, and you've decided our wedding dance and I'm going to take your last name and, you know, this is going. If you're 15, even if you're 20, I'm like, okay, that's part of it, right? That's part of it. But if you're doing that shit at this age or anything after 30, I agree. That's it's an amber flag at the least.
It's flappy.
It's flappy. Note it. The second one, absolute deal breaker, someone who doesn't show care.
Oh, yeah, that was it.
Nah, off you fuck. Yep. We don't even need to discuss that. And what was your third one?
Oh, the walking,
in front. Absolute. This is a really interesting thing to me, I reckon. It's that thing of, it's like if someone stops holding your hand.
That was, you know? That was it as well.
Yeah.
It was striding away. It was so, you know, and not thinking about that someone's got, the person next to you has got shorter legs or whatever it is, or might be slightly more disabled or whatever it is.
You're being careless and you're disinterested.
Yeah.
You know, and that's not that you have to bloody link hands interlaced everywhere you go and, you know, all that sort of stuff. But when there's a shift.
I wasn't like demanding that we skip together. It just would have been good if we looked like we knew each other when we were walking down the street.
Yeah, it'd be nice if we had, like, if you treated me the same way you would treat a stranger. Like, that might be quite nice.
You keep saying things that I've totally come to in my life. Yeah.
Me too. Been there, done that. All right, there are 10, but can you think of like the hottest celebrity you can think of. If I could like grant you, you can go on a date with Keanu Reeves, George Clooney. I don't care who it is. Jason Alexander. You pick your whatever your vibe is.
Nelly. Please. Cary Grant.
Cary. Oh, hello.
Because even
you're
though
so camp, Kaz Cook.
Yeah, well, he was a vaudevillian, and I've got a thing for vaudevillians.
Yeah.
Showbiz.
Yeah.
Not high art showbiz.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Really, stage comedians, magicians. I'm fascinated with that era. He really knew life. He came to the States. I think he had a great sense of playfulness. Mm. I think he swung both ways and all over the shop.
Love. And
funny bones. I like people with funny bones.
Funny bones. So you're sitting on a date with him.
Yeah.
And everything's amazing. And then there's just something where you go, oh, no. And feel free to be as superficial as you want.
I mean, apart from the things that you know, like, you know, racism and being rude to the waiter.
Yeah, yeah.
It's visible chewing. If I can see the food in your mouth, once the food's gone through your lips, I don't want to see it again.
Yes,
ever.
Yes. No, totally.
I don't want to see it. And that I have had I did have a time with someone like that, and I tried another few times. I know some people might have a problem with their nasal situation.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I cannot look at it.
Yeah.
And to have to look away from someone while they're eating, I mean, you do, I imagine I looked completely shitty.
Yeah.
I'm a shitty human and it doesn't reflect well on me.
Yeah. No, that's what that one's for. We've had, I don't like their shoes.
Oh. We've had
it's an invitation because we do, the other thing we do at this age, I think, is that we know what we shouldn't say and we know what we shouldn't like. And then you can actually make that mistake of going, for example, if you do have misophonia, you're not just going to get over that.
No.
Right? So actually do both of you a favor.
Yeah.
And like call it.
Unless everything else is fabulous, in which case read Jane Gregory's book and,
or eat in separate rooms.
Make an
accommodation.
I feel like the theme of our talk today is don't waste time.
Yeah, totally. No, mum's too busy. Seriously. I have two nights a week that are available for seeing my friends, dating, socializing, seeing shows, fucking shit or get off the pot. If you're not messaging me back, like I'm out of here.
Yeah.
I'm out of here. Like, and that is actually, I've got to say, the relief. Like that contrast of being that sort of 15, 16-year-old girl waiting by the landline. Will they call? Will they call? Now, not that I never have that, but I'm also like, look, you're interested or you're not.
Yeah.
Like I'm for you. You're going to make effort or you're not.
Yeah.
You know, and I won't accept that.
Would you make the effort? Would you call them?
100%. Yeah. 100%. Like a reciprocity.
Yeah. You
know? But I have chased in the past, Kaz. I'm too old for chasing.
No more chasing.
No more chasing.
Do you know what it is, Nelly? It's a fool's errand.
It's a fool's errand. You can't drag them there. And even though I joke about it, there is an element of kind of going, you know, I get a bit drag race about it. Like I'm a fucking queen. I've worked hard to be this and you either appreciate it or you don't. And I will treat you the same.
See, for me, it's not that. It's about a really fundamental honesty. I will show up as myself, not pretending.
Correct.
I'm not going to spill everything that's happened in my life, but I'm also not going to lie. I'm not going to put on a voice. I'm not going to not have dessert. Mm. I'm not going to do anything. Mm. I'm just going to be me.
I think an overarching theme from a lot of callers and certainly from me, and I don't know if you can relate to this, I'm not going to pretend not to have needs. You know, I'm going to go, actually, I do need a certain amount of contact, or you don't need to call me from work, you know, but if you leave me like 3 days without replying, I'm sorry, no, you know.
Well, I think you've got and the honesty where it kicks in for me too is that you get to say to that person, I need you to call me at least twice a week.
Exactly.
And if they don't, then you've got your answer.
Correct.
They should be thinking about you enough to call.
It's okay for them to go, I can do that this way. I can't do it this way because of this and this. And then we're all No, we're all on the same page.
Yeah, but don't promise you can do it and then don't do it and then everyone's wondering what and how and when. Yeah,
and don't tell me I shouldn't need it. I need it. You can give it all you can.
I'm just exhausted talking about this. No wonder I'm not dating. I just want toast and ice cream and to go to bed.
Oh, we've got to have lunch soon and I'll give you all the juicy goss. It's wild out there, Kaz. It's a jungle. It's a jungle, babe. But, you know, it's fun.
But I'm not a tiger. I'm a marmoset. I'm
right.
I'm up a tree looking at them.
Look, I don't even believe in star signs, but everyone who knows me is like, obviously you're a Leo. So, you know, like I am the predator of the jungle. Thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate it. I will be obviously putting links to all of your books in the show notes, but in particular, it's the menopause, I think, is really so relevant to this age group. And can I say to the men and people assigned male at birth and whoever, a whole range of people who are listening, this is truly relevant to you as well. There are women in your life.
It does also specifically and explicitly welcome trans and non-binary.
I know, which I adore and is part of, whether intentional or not, part of your inclusiveness. And like that in itself is kind of revolutionary in this space to acknowledge that. So good on you for that.
Oh, thank you, dear Nellie.
Yeah. Bless you, dear Kaz. I'm getting you back on.
I'm coming down out of the tree and back on.
Thank you, Kaz.
Dear Nelly, I could use some advice, dear Nelly. Yes, yeah, some help would be nice, dear Nelly. I'm eager to hear your point of view, dear Nelly. There's a lot to explore, dear Nelly. When you're 40 or more, dear Nelly. So I'm hoping we can talk it through. Dear Nelly, I'm rocking my prime and it's time to get down some. Maybe mess around some. It's never too late to start again, dear Nelly. Won't you hear my request, dear Nelly? With your fabulous guest, dear Nelly. You tell me what you think I should do.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hey, thanks so much for listening to Dear Nelly. Now, don't be shy. I would love to hear your questions and comments. To send me a recording or an email, go to nellythomas.com and follow the links. It's super easy, and you might hear me talk about your question in a future episode. Huge thanks to producer Sam Peterson from the Producer Boy Creative Production team and to producer Faye Younger, who in addition to being an excellent human, is also a brilliant real estate buyer's advocate and can be found at youngerhill.com. Thanks to Acast and all the team. And lastly, to you. Without the listeners, I'm just a middle-aged mole talking shit to no one. Please rate, review, and consider subscribing for $5 a month for a bonus episode and to help me keep the lights on. And tell your bloody mates, would ya? I'd really appreciate it. Love yous.